lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
The T-ball program usually heard at this time will be momentarily delayed for a special broadcast.
Prepare yourself for a trip through time, space, and the reality that you have known. When you enter into Willow's world. Willow Andreasen brings you the thought-provoking dialogue and news from around the world that shows your mind has no limitations. Take it away, Willow.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome from a beautiful United Kingdom. My name is Willow Andreasen, also known as Surrey Sunflower, in the Freedom Slips Revolution Radio chat room. Hopefully I can be heard. But again, I just want to say a big, big good afternoon to you. And it's the Monday, the 26th of April, 2021 edition of Willow's World, by the way. Just thought I'd let you know that. And before I get started with telling you what's happening on today's show, I just want to say a big thank you to Maggie, who was on before me with the Concord show. And also a big, big thank you to all the hosts here at the station for everything you do, to all the producers, all the moderators. And the team I'm just so humbled and honoured to be a part of, that's the amazing management team who bend over backwards and beyond to ensure that this remains on air, this station remains on air, both studios, as close to 24/7 as we can manage. And so again, big, big thank you to the guys. And also, huge outpouring of gratitude and lots of love as well to Liz Ringley, who continues to represent so, so much to the station. And to the individual whose vision, whose prescience, whose drive convinced him that he needed to establish this safe and secure network for free speech over 10 years ago now, New Year's Day, 2011. Because he could see these times that we are living through right now. He could see them coming. And I think you'll find I think pretty much everybody here could see these times coming. And it was his, hold on a minute. Sorry, I was just checking something out there. But as I said, there's just so much we appreciate Mike Ringley for. Without him, we wouldn't have this safe and secure platform for free speech. We truly wouldn't. And it was his desire to educate, elucidate, and emancipate. To equip listeners with the tools they required to build their own methods of navigating their ways through the times we're currently finding ourselves living through, and to do so as fearlessly as possible, folks. To do so as fearlessly as possible. And we miss him every single day. We miss him every single day, folks. That's Nighthawk. Big, big thank you to Hawk. And I'm looking at his photograph and I'm saying this huge outpouring of gratitude and lots of love and kisses to my late other half, Bray Arios, for everything he continues to represent in my life. Thank you very, very much indeed, my love. And also an especially huge outpouring of gratitude and lots of love and hugs and kisses to some very, very special loved ones indeed. They know exactly who they are. They know exactly who they are. And just a big thank you to them. And to Azimuth, an individual who, excuse me, I've just got to mute. An individual who understands the strange paradox that is Willow and is unfazed and smiles. Thank you. And if there's somebody else who's listening as well, a big, big thank you to you as well. And you're not alone. And huge, huge outpouring of gratitude to you amazing listeners. I mean, we do this for you, folks. We wouldn't be able to do this without you either. This is a totally symbiotic relationship. We are able to remain commercial free because of your kindness and your support and generosity, which we never ever take for granted. We never do. We appreciate how challenging the past year has been for so many people. And yet you are supporting us through these times. We are humbled and grateful to you all for your support. We are truly blessed with the most amazing supporters and listeners. And we are just immensely, immensely grateful to you all. Thank you. Now, if you'd like to support the station, and you're not sure how, folks, there are ways you can do so. And there's something I've got to open up before I forget about it, because I've managed to sort of get the computer all sorted out and everything about 15 minutes because I was doing other things. I've been very busy today. And I'm going to open this up before I forget, you see. But yeah, if you'd like to support the station, folks, there's many ways you can do so. And what I suggest you do is you visit the station's website, which you can reach using one of two URLs. You could either use www.revolution.radio, that's www.revolution.radio, or www.freedomslips.com. I'll repeat that as well, www.freedomslips.com. And explore a way to your heart's content, folks. So I'm just waiting for this to come up. Come on. Come here. Because I didn't get the chance to post up the details on social media today. I just didn't get the chance. So I'll tell you what's going on. Once I've run through the ways that you can actually support the station, folks. So what I do is I recommend you visit our website, as I've just mentioned, how you can reach the website, and I have yet to reach it myself. Say it's been a very busy day. Are you going to do anything, or did I not do it yet? I didn't do it yet, did I? There we go. That's better. And you'll reach this. I mean, it was a fabulous website to begin with, folks. It really was. But the lovely Monster 383 has, if you've not been for a while, you'll see he's radically redecorated. He really has truly radically redecorated. And it's gorgeous. It really is absolutely fabulous. It's just gorgeous. And the places you need to explore are on the nav bar, folks, which will remain at the top of the page as you scroll down on the homepage. Fifth along is the store. That's a link to our Zazzle store, folks. And you know what? We'll do this today, you see. we'll do this live, which I've been doing it live pretty much the last few shows, to be honest. Oh, what's that about? So as I say, our Zazzle store, great place to go and explore and treat yourself to something rather special. Say mouse mat or coffee mug or t-shirt, and the items not only have Hawk's original designs on them, but also the station's general manager's fantastic designs as well. And let's just see, is there any special deals today? 15% off, as in 15% off. So it's 15% off, folks. So yeah, probably a good day to go and browse through the virtual shelves and treat yourself to something really, really lovely. As I say, you'd be helping out the station as well. Then the next place you explore is penultimate on the options there on the nav bar, which is donations. And this details pretty much every single way bar two methods of supporting the station. And top three all have monthly support options available, folks. And that's Patreon. You need to be a patron in order to explore that page as well, folks. You really do. You have to. And also donor box is there as well. That's the alternative to PayPal. International in scope, easy to use, and again, monthly support available, or you can use it whenever you wish. If you have a credit or debit card and happen to live in the US or Canada, then direct payment North America only may be a wonderful option for you to consider as well. Again, you can use a monthly support option, or you can use it whenever you wish. And yes, we accept cryptocurrency as support as well, folks. Three at the moment, that's Bitcoin, or they are rather, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. That's Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. QR codes are available on there, folks. You point your device at them and do your fangs. And there's also some lots of letters and numbers beneath those as well. So I think that's the option if you don't actually have something which reads a QR device, or you don't have a QR device or QR reading device, rather. You understand now why I don't go into technical descriptions, don't you? I've just given you a prime example of why I don't. And last but not least, we have the snail mail options available as well, folks. So you can still send checks or money orders to us, and they are to be made payable to Revolution Radio. Revolution spelled R-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N. That's R-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N. And radio is spelled R-A-D-I-O. I'll repeat that as well. It's R-A-D-I-O. And then they are to be mailed to the wonderful lady horse, Terry Ackerman. Terry spelled T-E-R-R-Y. I'll repeat that, T-E-R-R-Y. And Ackerman is spelled A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. I'll repeat that as well. It's A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. And the mailing address is 1793. That's 1793 North Eden. Eden spelled E-D-O-N Road. That's Allen, A-L-L-E-N, Michigan, M-I, 49227. So checks or money orders made payable to Revolution Radio are then to be mailed to the wonderful lady horse, Terry Ackerman, at 1793 North Eden Road, Allen, Michigan, 49227. And those details, along with the Patreon details, are also available on the homepage. And I'm returning there right now. And you know what I'm going to do. I get all excited about this because Monster has re-established the, as I've mentioned, every show since he's re-established it. Yes, it's the count. And mine currently reads 66,561. Now, I mean, the true representation was, I mean, we've well surpassed the 500,000 views before the revamp, and Monster had to reset the count. But yet mine currently reads 66,561. So big, big thank you to you all. So yeah, we do receive a lot of traffic on this site. And if you can advertise on the site as well, $25 a month. And the details you need to find out more about that are the station's general manager's email address. And of course, you know the station's general manager is AMAD Painter. And the email address that you need is themadpainter13@yahoo.com. That's themadpainter13@yahoo.com. I'll spell out that first bit for you. themadpainter13. And I'll repeat it. themadpainter13@yahoo.com. Don't forget the archives, folks, as well. Free to access will be for the foreseeable. And you can reach the archives either by clicking on the archives, which is third along on the nav bar, or going direct to its URL, which is www.revolutionradioarchives.com. I'll repeat that, www.revolutionradioarchives.com. And then the details you need are the username and the password. Both are lowercase and both are case sensitive. Username is Rev Radio. I'll spell that for you. R-E-V-R-A-D-I-O. It's all one word. R-E-V-R-A-D-I-O. And then the password is Rocks exclamation mark. Rocks exclamation mark. R-O-C-K-S exclamation mark. Don't forget, that's the character exclamation mark, not the two words. But don't forget that, because you won't get in without it, folks. But again, a big, big thank you to you all for your continued support. We're truly, truly grateful indeed. Thank you. So what's happening on today's show? Well, I'm going to wander into the chat room shortly to say a big hello to everybody in there and make sure everybody's okay. And the first hour is going to be focusing on both the day's Geek and Global headlines. So I'll be wandering over to the Nexus of Nerddom. This is IO9 Gizmodo for the day's morning spoilers, which I've had a very, very quick glance, and I think there's some interesting stuff on there today. And then I'll be wandering east to Mother Russia for the day's global headlines from Russia today. Then after the break, at the top of the hour, the second hour will be heralding the opening of doors for sultry snuggery that is Willow's Poetry Corner. Now, the Poetry Corner, as I did say last week, this was going to happen, and I mentioned this on Sunday as well. Be taking a brief sojourn from its usual peregrinations to focus on the impact of the pandemic upon the live music scene, specifically the struggles by independent music venues in both the United States and the United Kingdom to survive, both during and after the lockdowns of the past year and a bit. And I've got a selection of articles about this very important topic, because independent music venues, I feel, are a vital location for budding musicians to hone their craft and to become accustomed to how things work on a stage, how to relate to their audiences. And the ambience in an independent music venue is so, so very different, so much more intimate than, say, a big stadium. Now, I've been to both. I've gone to them. I've been to stadium gigs and to smaller venue gigs, and I have to say, the older I'm getting, I prefer the smaller venues. So I will be focusing on that topic during the second hour. But I'm going to wander into the chat room now to say a big, big hello to everybody in there and make sure everybody is okay. Let's see who is in there. Craig Duncan is in the chat room, as well as Maggie. Maggie, of course, is the host of the Concord show, which, as I said, just been on before this one. And she'll be back on Wednesday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern on Studio B. One Mr. E is in, as well as Akaba. Zippy 101 is in, as well as Mitzi, who's a fabulous host here at the station. She hosts the Bridges Well Healing with the Elements of Life show on Studio B on Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. Eastern. And another fabulous host is in, that's Mona. She's over the other side of the studio wall at the moment. Today's Adventures of a Feral Hippie. Rudolph is in, as well as Ames Marie. Comet is in, as well as a fabulous manager. That's a lovely Monster 383. And Dryfly Guy is in, as well as Wally. An old guy is in, as well as Mace 139. Harry the Busker is in, as well as Gino 2017. Batsman is in, as well as some weird person by the name of Sorry Sunflower. Nezomania is in, as well as the voice of the overnights at the weekend and sometimes during the week as well. That's Gerbear. And another wonderful manager is in. That's Pat Rabbit. Patrick, of course, who hosts the Not for Public Consumption show on the studio on Thursdays at midday. Eastern, I should say. Dirt Engineer is in, as well as Stardust Man. Popsicle Toes is in, as well as the omnipresent Mr. Rowe, who hosts three shows on this very studio. Sundays, 5 p.m. Eastern, is the Rowe Lounge. He'll be on after this show today at 4 p.m. Eastern with Crypto Corner And then he will be on tomorrow, also at 4 p.m. Eastern, with Rose Corner. He also hosts the Reality Extraction show on Studio B on Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. And he pops up everywhere, does Ro? He does. He pops up everywhere, she says. Sassy Ass is in as well as Not Much to It, and Hammerhead is in as well. So who else has been in? Dot Time's been in as well as AR185162. I do like that one. That's a very interesting choice. So sounds like a science fiction device. Michael Donaghy's been in as well as Lauren, and Goldsmith 007's been in as well as Word Warrior. Quasar's been in as well as Sam Squatch. Just Me has been in as well as Boy Solomon. But if you want to come in and join us, folks, it'd be good to see you in there. The more, the merrier. It'd be good to see you. I know. Yeah, that's why I'm giving it. That's why I'm giving the subject focus this afternoon. One mystery. Absolutely. I really do want to highlight that. But before I do so, we'll be focusing on the geek and global headlines. So we'll be wandering over now to the Nexus of Nerddom. This is IO9 Gizmodo for the day's morning spoilers, which constitutes the geek headlines, of course. I've just said that, haven't I? Compiled, as always, by James Whitbrook and Gordon Jackson. It was posted up today, and it's headlined Updates from She-Hulk, Peacemaker, and More. So Whoopi Goldberg wants in on her own superhero saga. Adam McKay teases his Doomsday comedy. Plus, what's to come on all the DCCW shows, more footage from Cruella, and what's next on Fear the Walking Dead. It's me, my spoilers. So we start with untitled Whoopi Goldberg superhero film. So during a recent interview with Variety, Whoopi Goldberg revealed she's writing a superhero movie about an older black woman who acquires new powers and has to learn to use them. So here's a quote from the interview. So since I was a little kid, I've been obsessed with superheroes. They're all saving the Earth all the time. But do you know who's really going to save the Earth? Old black women. Next is untitled Pixar film. So Pixar is looking to cast a teenage girl in the role of Jess, a 14-year-old transgender girl in an unspecified new project. Next is Don't Look Up. So during a recent episode of The Happy... Come here. What you come here. Don't Look Up. Yeah, during a recent episode of The Happy, Sad, Confused podcast, which was... they posted details of by a film. Adam McKay described his upcoming Doomsday comedy Don't Look Up as a tonal cross between The Other Guys and The Big Short. Neither of which I'm familiar with, but here's a quote. So definitely not as dark as Vice. Vice, I'd say. Probably ended up being a drama with some comedy. But Big Short, still, even though there's drama in it, I would say this one is a tad more of a comedy than The Big Short. I don't know if the Ferrell movies, because they're so uniquely Will Ferrell, but somewhere in between The Other Guys and The Big Short, I say, is where this one lives. And next is Cruella. So Emma Stone's Cruella de Vil gets her origin story in a new TV spot. There is indeed a new look at it. If you don't want to be spoiled, don't look at it. Siberia is next. So Willem Dafoe goes on a spirit quest in the latest trailer for Abel Ferreira's Siberia. That's also available for you to look at if you want to, but if you don't want to be spoiled, don't look at it. She-Hulk is next. So a photo from Atlanta filming sees Tatiana Maslany on set to play Jennifer Walters, a.k.a. She-Hulk. Peacemaker is next. So James Gunn has finished his first cut of the Peacemaker pilot. Indeed, has been talking about it on Twitter. Secrets of Sulphur Springs is next. So according to TV Line, Disney has renewed Secrets of Sulphur Springs for a second season. Legends of Tomorrow, Spooner boards the Wave Rider in the synopsis for Meet the Legends, airing May the 9th. So here's the synopsis. So with Spooner, played by Lizeth Chavez, on board, Ava hopes that her special abilities will help lead them to locate the aliens spread out on the timeline, which could ultimately lead them to Sarah, played by Katie Lotz. The legends soon find themselves tracking an alien in 1950s San Bernardino and having to figure out what is making the town go on a feeding frenzy. Zari, played by Tala Ash, lets Berad, played by Cheyenne Sobian, know she is ready to use the totem, but Berad isn't ready to share it, causing tension between them. Meanwhile, after crash landing, Sara tries to figure out a plan and runs into none other than Amelia Earhart, who could be her ticket home. Dominic Purcell, Nick Zano, Matt Ryan, Adam Seckham, Jez McKellen, and Olivia Swan also star. Rachel Talalay directed the episode, written by Matthew Marler and Morgan Faust. Well, if it's directed by Rachel Talalay, it's going to be good. Next is Batwoman. So Batwoman may or may not meet Clue Master in the synopsis, but I'll give you a clue, which is airing May the 9th. So here's the synopsis. So when Sophie, played by Megan Tandy, must face a foe from her rookie days with the Crows, Ryan, played by Javisha Leslie, Mary, played by Nicole Kang, and Lou, played by Camaris Johnson, are also pulled into the villain's game. Meanwhile, the tables turn on Alice, played by Rachel Skarsten, when she finds herself in dire circumstances. And Jacob, played by Dougray Scott, continues to revisit the past. Marshall Virtue directed the episode, written by Caroline Dries and Natalie Abrams. Next is Black Lightning. So Lynn makes the biggest decision of her life in the synopsis for the Book of Reunification, Chapter 2, which is airing May the 10th. So here's a synopsis. So Jefferson, played by Chris Williams, takes Khalil, played by Jordan Calloway, up on his offer to help. Meanwhile, Lynn, played by Christine Adams, finds herself wrestling with what could be the biggest decision of her life. Lastly, Tobias, played by Marvin Jones III, follows through on a hunch. Professor Williams, James Remar, and Chantel Thuy also star. The episode was written by Ashley O'Connolly and directed by Billy Woodruff. The Flash is next, so Barry seeks counsel from Timeless Wells. Is that what we're calling him? In the synopsis for Timeless, the 9th episode of The Flash's 7th season. So here's the synopsis. So after a devastating betrayal, Barry, played by Grant Gustin, turns to Timeless Wells, played by Tom Cavanagh, for help. Indeed, he is called Timeless Wells. So meanwhile, Iris, played by Candice Patton, leads Team Citizen down a dangerous road in search of answers. And Cisco, played by Carlos Valdez, confides his biggest fear to Camilla, played by guest star Victoria Park. The Flash is starring Grant Gustin as Barry Allen, The Flash, Candice Patton as Iris West Allen, Danielle Panabaker as Caitlin Snow, Killer Frost, Carlos Valdez as Cisco Ramon, or Vibe, Tom Cavanagh as Harrison Wells. They're saying Timeless and Harrison Wells here. Okay. Jesse L. Martin as Detective Joe West and Danielle Nicolet as Cecile Coulson. Menage Hooder directed the episode, written by Kristen Kim and Joshua V. Gilbert. And next to Supergirl. Now, Mondays is usually quite lengthy. So we'll see if I've got a chance to get to Kotaku. We'll see. So Supergirl is next. So the Super Friends enter the Phantom Zone in the synopsis for Fear Not, directed by David Harewood. So here's the synopsis. So as the Super Friends brave the Phantom Zone to bring Supergirl, played by Melissa Benoist, home, each member of the team is confronted by visions of their worst fear. Supergirl stars Melissa Benoist as Kara Danvers, Supergirl, Chyla Lee as Alex Danvers, Mekhad Brooks as James Olsen, David Harewood as Hank Henshaw, Jeremy Jordan as Winslow Wind Shot, and Tyler Hoechlin as Superman. David Harewood, as just mentioned, directed the episode, written by Jay Holtham and L. Lipson. Nancy Drew is next, so Tom Swift joins Nancy Drew in the synopsis for The Celestial Visitor, airing May the 12th. So here's the synopsis. So Tian Richards of Burden and Dumplin guest stars as Tom Swift. So as things begin to go haywire at the Claw, a striking stranger appears looking for Nancy, who's played by Kennedy McMahon, and announces himself as a billionaire Tom Swift, played by guest star Tian Richards. Meanwhile, Ace, played by Alex Saxon, has issues with the way Nancy insists on handling things with Celia, who is played by guest star Terrell Rothery. Tunji Kasim, Leah Lewis, Madison Jaizani, and Riley Smith also star. Ruben Garcia directed the episode, written by Melinda Sue Taylor and Nogar Landau. Next is Legacy, so Hope's a bit suspicious in the synopsis for I Was Made to Love You, the 12th episode of Legacy's 3rd season. Here it is. So Hope, played by Danielle Rose Russell's suspicion, is piqued after Wade, played by guest star Elijah B. Moore, shares some startling news with her. To uncover the secrets of a mysterious artifact, Alaric, played by Matthew Davis, must work with an enemy from his past. After Ethan, played by Leo Howard, finds himself in harm's way, MG, played by Quincy Fowles, is forced to make a difficult decision. Danielle Rose Russell, Aria Shagasamy, Jenny Boyd, Quincy Fowles, Peyton Alex Smith, Chris Lee and Ben Levin also star. Michael Alovitz directed the episode, written by Brett Matthews. Charmed is next, so the Charmed Ones find a letter from Mom in the synopsis for Spectral Healing, airing May the 14th. So here's the synopsis. Told you, busy one today. Charmed Ones, played by Melanie Diaz, Madeline Mantock and Sarah Jeffrey, discover a letter from their mother that may hold answers to burning questions. Meanwhile, Harry, played by Rupert Evans, considers a life-changing decision. And Jordan, played by Jordan Doniker's Goodwill, gets him into trouble. Also starring Poppy Drayton, Jackie Gold directed the episode written by Tommy Cook and Nikki Renner. Kung Fu is next, and Nikki takes the law into her own hands in the synopsis for Rage, airing May the 12th. So here's a synopsis. When the retrieval of a weapon doesn't go as planned, Nikki, played by Olivia Liang, takes matters into her own hands. Elsewhere, Jin, played by Zima, takes Mei Li, played by Ken Hua Tan, on a surprise date, and Althea, played by Shannon Dang, finds herself faced with an ultimatum. John Praseda, Eddie Liu, Gavin Stenhouse, and Vanessa Kai also star. Joe Menendez directed the episode written by Lillian Yu. Fear the Walking Dead is next, so a new group is introduced in both the trailer and a clip for next week's episode of Fear the Walking Dead. Now, if you don't want to be spoiled, don't look at them, but I can't look at them anyway, so they're not available, you see. And finally is Bird Girl. So Bird Girl's forehead swells for size of an empanada in the trailer for next week's episode. So very good. Very busy one today, so I don't really have time to go wandering over to Kotaku. There we go. Just post that there in the chat room. Just want to say who else is coming. Oh, the lovely Lizzie is in, meow. She's just come into the chat room. Of course, Lizzie hosts two shows here at the station. Both are called Spirit Talk with Lizzie, and she's on Tuesdays on this studio at 2 p.m. Eastern and also Sundays on Studio B at 11 a.m. Eastern. And Two Crows is in as well. So good to see you all. So, wandering east now for the day's global headlines from Russia today. And we start off, as we always do, with the world news section. And the main headline is Bill Gates says no to opening vaccine patents, adds it probably won't take a decade for poor nations to get the jab. So suggestion to waive patent restrictions on COVID-19 vaccines has been rejected by Bill Gates, who said he doesn't believe intellectual property has anything to do with the drawn-out global effort to rein in the pandemic. French police cars vandalised with graffiti, pig's head impaled on broom. So several police cars have been damaged and covered in graffiti in Rungis, a southern suburb of Paris, with vandals placing a broom reportedly topped with a pig's head against one of the vehicles. China's next probe will carry French-Russian gear to the moon, asteroid defence system planned also. So as part of its major ambitions in the field of space exploration and development, China has confirmed that its next robot lunar lander in 2024 will feature equipment from France, Sweden, Russia and Italy. Hit by a massive COVID-19 wave, India seeks oxygen and antivirals from EU with aid expected soon. So New Delhi has reached out to the EU seeking medical oxygen and antiviral drugs to fight its ongoing surge in coronavirus cases. The EU commission said the aid is expected to become available shortly. And the first human home. Archaeologists discovered traces of 1.8 million-year-old stone tools in African Miracle Cave. This one I'm going to look at. So Israeli and Canadian researchers say they have uncovered evidence of the prehistoric inhabitants of the South African cave. And they found evidence that the prehistoric inhabitants of the South African cave were fashioning stone tools nearly 2 million years ago, making the cave one of the world's oldest homes. Full closure. So Turkey set for weeks-long lockdown, Erdogan says, amid country's stubborn COVID-19 death rate. So Turkey will enter a nationwide lockdown later this month until May the 17th, which will include school closures and intercity travel curbs in a bid to halt the spread of COVID-19, President Tayyip Erdogan has announced. Black axe bust. So Italian police arrest 30 suspected members of Nigerian mafia gang. So dozens of people suspected to be members of a Nigerian mafia group, including the gang's alleged leader, have been detained in Italy after a series of raids around the country, police have said. And millions of children at risk from serious disease after COVID disrupts 60 mass immunisation campaigns, say UN health agencies. So an alliance of international health agencies has warned that up to 228 million people, mostly children, are at risk from serious disease after the COVID pandemic derailed around 60 mass immunisation campaigns in 50 countries. Army drafted in to help India's struggling hospitals battle spiralling COVID cases. So the Indian government has ordered the country's armed forces to provide support to medical facilities in a bid to alleviate pressure on hospitals as the nation faces an overwhelming surge in COVID cases. So Spanish minister receives package with bloodied knife ahead of election after fellow politicians get death threats and bullets. So someone sent a package with a knife to a Spanish minister, the government has confirmed. The incident came after several politicians received letters with death threats ahead of a regional election. No external forces are allowed to intervene, says Beijing, after Canberra calls on allies to work together for Taiwan peace. So the Chinese Foreign Ministry has issued a stern rebuke aimed at Canberra after Australia's Minister of Defence urged its allies to work together to ensure the dispute over Taiwan does not turn into a war. That's another one I'm going to look at as well. Excuse me, I've just got to mute a moment. There you go. So yeah, we're going to have a look at the first one, which is the first human home. Archaeologists discovering traces of 1.8 million year old stone tools in African Miracle Cave. So Israeli and Canadian researchers say they have uncovered evidence the prehistoric inhabitants of the South African cave were fashioning stone tools nearly 2 million years ago, making the cave one of the world's oldest homes. The discovery was made in Wonderwerk Cave, a well-known archaeological site located in southern Africa's Kalahari Desert. Researchers have been excavating the cave for years. A group of geologists and archaeologists from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, the University of Toronto, say they have found the earliest evidence of human activity in the underground chamber, whose Afrikaans name means miracle. The team analysed sedimentary layers 2.5 metres, 8.2 feet thick that contain stone tools, animal remains and other traces of prehistoric life. They then measured the magnetic signal of the sediment samples. Their analysis showed that some of the samples were magnetised to the south instead of the north, which is the direction of today's magnetic field. The discovery helped determine the age of the sedimentary layers, as well as their contents. According to the archaeologists, the cave had housed simple stone tools dating back 1.8 million years. And they also found evidence that fires had been lit there over a million years ago. Although older stone tools have been found in other parts of Africa, the new discovery is unique because it was made in a cave, as opposed to an open-air site. The evidence of fire setting inside the cave was particularly significant, as similar traces of ash found in the open air could have been the result of natural wildfires. Hailing the breakthrough, Israeli media described the cave as the oldest home in human history. Scientists described their findings as an important step towards understanding the tempo of human evolution across the African continent. They said that being able to accurately date the ancient home would aid with future research into how early humans lived. It's rather exciting. Just put that one there in the chat room. And next is the ongoing situation about Taiwan. So no external forces are allowed to intervene, says Beijing, after Canberra calls on allies to work together for Taiwan peace. So Chinese Foreign Ministry has issued a stern rebuke aimed at Canberra after Australia's Minister of Defence urged its allies to work together to ensure the dispute over Taiwan does not turn into a war. Speaking on Monday, Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin said the turmoil over the fate of Taiwan has been caused by Taipei's unwillingness to recognise the 1992 consensus that embodied the One China principle, as well as its decision to align itself with external forces. Wang said Taiwan's constant striving for independence was a provocation to Beijing. China must be reunified, and it is bound to be reunified. China is willing to do its utmost to strive for the prospect of peaceful reunification, but it will never leave any room for any form of separatist activities, he stated. In response to comments made by Canberra about Taiwan, the spokesman stated, it is hoped that the Australian side will fully recognise the high sensitivity of the Taiwan issue, abide by the One China principle, be prudent in words and deeds, and refrain from sending any wrong signals to the separatist forces of Taiwanese independence. Wang's riposte comes after Australian Defence Minister Peter Dutton said on Sunday that the chance for conflict over Taiwan involving China should not be discounted. We want to make sure we continue to be a good neighbour in the region and that we work with our partners and with our allies. But nobody wants to see conflict between China and Taiwan or anywhere else, Dutton added, angering Beijing. Taipei has been speaking of its increasing willingness to work with the US and other like-minded countries to deter China. Washington has reiterated its commitment to the island nation, sending an unofficial delegation in recent weeks, and once again sailing warships through the Taiwan Strait, while Beijing sent jets flying over Taiwan's airspace. China has called on the US to stop interfering in its internal affairs, as it sees Taiwan as an integral part of its nation. So I'll just share that one there for you. There you go. So we're going to have a look at the US news now. Excuse me a minute. There we go. So yeah, we start with the main headline on the USA news section, which is US Supreme Court agrees to hear landmark Second Amendment case on carrying handguns in public. So the highest court in America has agreed to hear an appeal backed by the National Rifle Association against New York State's restrictions on carrying concealed handguns in public for self-defense purposes. I may look at that one. Black Lives Matter hammered for condemning senseless killing of Makia Bryant, ignoring knife and threat to stab. So the Black Lives Matter movement was savaged by conservatives for portraying the death of teenager Makia Bryant as police senselessly taking another black child, while omitting crucial details of how the incident unfolded. Over 70% of Americans unwilling to get Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 jab following pause over blood clot worry, says poll. So only 22% of unvaccinated Americans say they are willing to get the one-shot Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine following the pause on distribution after concerns over blood clots. Minnesota AG Keith Ellison draws flak after saying he felt a little bad for Derek Chauvin as guilty verdicts were delivered. So Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison has drawn fierce backlash after saying he felt a little bad for former cop Derek Chauvin as the guilty verdicts in the George Floyd murder trial were delivered. A state senator says Alaska airline monopoly should be reviewed after it bans her for not masking up and forcing her to take ferry. So Alaska State Senator Laura Reinbold was forced to take a huge ferry and road journey to the state's capital city, Juneau, after Alaska Airlines banned her from flying for refusing to wear a mask. A woman sues Reddit for a selective blindness to child porn on its platform. So a woman has sued social media giant Reddit over its alleged repeated refusal to remove pornographic images of herself from a whopping 36 subreddits. The platform knows it's a hub of illegal child porn activity, the suit claims. North Carolina mayor declares state of emergency in preparation for release of footage showing police shooting of Andrew Brown. So the mayor of Elizabeth City, North Carolina, has caused concern among activists after declaring a state of emergency ahead of releasing body cam footage for the killing of 42-year-old black man Andrew Brown Jr. A self-proclaimed race baiter posts video of white hotel clerk having breakdown after being scolded by a black customer. So US filmmaker Tariq Nasheed has stirred Twitter anger by sharing a controversial video showing a receptionist who caved in under an angry customer's pressure by making it about the skin colours of the two people involved. Oscar slammed after Anthony Hopkins wins Best Actor over late star Chadwick Boseman in ceremony rearranged to make it final award. Fans of the late actor Chadwick Boseman tweeted their fury at the Oscars after the Black Panther star failed to win the Best Actor award. The show conspicuously changed the running order, making it the final category. I'm going to tell Gretchen. Michigan lawmaker threatens to call governor, punish police for busting him after drunken crash. So newly released dashcam footage shows Michigan lawmaker Jewel Jones trying to wield his political influence, even threatening to call Governor Gretchen Whitmer as state troopers tried to arrest him after an alleged drunken crash. And Florida's Ron DeSantis, the Republican governor whom Democrats love to hate, is now triggering leftists with the way he eats pizza. So Pizzagate 2021 isn't about paedophiles or satanic rituals. Rather, the political controversy this time is over the way that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis eats pizza, an image that's too triggering for some Democrats to stomach. There's a couple there I want to look at. I'm gonna go with the main article and the Michigan lawmaker who was threatening to call Gretchen. I'm gonna go for those two. Actually, there's a couple there I could go for. I'm gonna stick with the two that I've already selected. So we go back to the main headline for this one, which is. The highest court in America has agreed to hear an appeal backed by the National Rifle Association against New York State's restrictions on carrying concealed handguns in public for self-defense purposes. Two gun owners and the New York affiliate of the NRA are looking to overturn a decision by a lower court which rejected their challenge to the state's gun regulations. New York is one of just 8 US states which currently limit a gun owner's right to carry their weapon in public. The plaintiffs argued that those restrictions have violated their Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, insisting instead that New Yorkers should also be able to carry guns outside their homes unhampered. The two men initially went to court after a state firearms licensing officer granted them concealed carry permits, but limited it to hunting and target practice only. The Supreme Court, which had refused to examine the appeal last June, has now changed its mind, again embedding itself into the heated gun rights debate in America. The case, which will likely be heard in autumn, could prove one of the most prominent rulings on the scope of the Second Amendment since the 2008 and 2010 decisions that established a nationwide right to keep a gun at home for self-defense. The plaintiffs' hopes of success may be boosted by the fact that there's a 6-3 conservative majority in the Supreme Court after Justice Amy Coney Barrett joined the body in October. Conservatives are generally believed to have a more expansive view of Second Amendment rights. The Supreme Court should settle this issue once and for all, lawyer Paul Clement, who is representing the challengers, wrote in his reply brief to the court. Thus, the nation is split, with the Second Amendment alive and well in the vast middle of the nation, and those same rights disregarded near the coasts, he argued. For its part, New York State has urged the justices to reject that argument, pointing out that restrictions on carrying guns aren't a blanket ban and are aimed at reducing crime as well as promoting public safety. The announcement that the controversial appeal will be heard by the Supreme Court comes in the wake of a string of deadly mass shootings across the country. Earlier this month, a gunman killed 8 employees and then committed suicide at a FedEx facility in Indianapolis, while 2 similar incidents in Georgia and Colorado killed a combined total of 18 people. That's 1/8 people in March. So I'm just going to share that one there in the chat room. There we go. And the next article is the tantrum throwing, threatening to call Gretchen. So, newly released dash cam footage shows Michigan lawmaker Jewel Jones trying to wield his political influence, even threatening to call Governor Gretchen Whitmer, as state troopers tried to arrest him after an alleged drunken crash. "I'll call Governor Whitmer right now," the 26-year-old Democrat from suburban Detroit is heard saying on the video. He added, "When I call Gretchen, I'll need all IDs and badge numbers, everything." And later said, "If you abuse me, I'm going to get upset. I'm going to tell Gretchen, I'm going to get you all on desk duty, bro, I'm telling you." The incident occurred earlier this month after Jones allegedly crashed his sport utility vehicle into a ditch while traveling on Interstate 96 toward the state capitol. Police allegedly had a blood alcohol content of 0.19%, more than twice the legal limit, and that he resisted arrest. Police also found a Glock pistol in the SUV's cup holder. Jones's apparent attempts to leverage his political influence didn't stop at threatening to call the Democrat governor. "It's not going to be good for you, I'm telling you," he told 2 troopers as they struggled to handcuff him on the ground. I run you all's budget, bro. The state lawmaker accused police of harassing him all the time and abusing him because he's black. "You all don't know who you're dealing with, bro," he said. When dropping Whitmer's name apparently didn't persuade officers to let him go, Jones invoked the name of Michigan State Police Director Joe Gasper. At one point, he said he wanted Gasper to handle the arrest. "If someone else take me in, I'm going to be upset and I'm going to come at you all," he said. Later, when he was handcuffed and sitting in the back of a police vehicle, Jones told a trooper to call Gasper. "Tell Joe who you got and call effing Joe," he said. "I'm not sure whether he's up or not. If he's not up, wake him up. Tell Joe who you have. Tell Joe who you've handcuffed, okay? Let him know that I would like to go home. After that, let me go effing home." Jones then offered to make the call to Gasper. "You want me to call him?" he asked. "I've got like 10 troopers around me. I'll call him myself. I'll call him and I'll tell him I'd like to go home." Jones was tasered twice and hit with pepper spray while allegedly resisting arrest. However, his lawyer told NBC News that his client was fully cooperative with troopers and only wielded political influence to stop them from using excessive force. That statement was issued before the release of dashcam footage, which appears to show Jones ignoring commands and resisting arrest. He was still name-dropping while cuffed and sitting alone in the back of a police vehicle. Jones is a volunteer auxiliary police officer for the city of Inkster, west of Detroit. At one point during his clash with troopers, he told them to drop him off at his home or at the Inkster police station. "I can give you my address," he said. "You can drop me off at the crib." The Jones arrest isn't the first name-dropping incident involving Whitmer. The governor last May urged Michiganders not to jam waterfront attractions on Memorial Day weekend after lockdown rules were eased. But her husband reportedly tried to arrange a trip to a popular area on Traverse Bay. He asked if his boat could be put in the water sooner at the local marina because of his wife's position. Whitmer later dismissed the request as a failed attempt at humour. So there we go. I'll just share that one there in the chat room. And yeah, I've got time to have a look at the UK news. Whether I actually manage to get through anything in depth, I don't know. But we start with the main headline, which is two injured college evacuated after gunfire reported in West Sussex, say police. So one man has been arrested after police in West Sussex, England, responded to reports of gunfire near Crawley College. Two police were injured in the incident, officers said. College staff and students have been evacuated. Gravity is racist. Sheffield Uni wants disclaimers on Isaac Newton's theory, say he benefited from colonial activity, says media. So Isaac Newton may have laid the foundations of modern physics, but professors at Sheffield University reportedly think he benefited from colonial era activity. The engineering curriculum should be decolonised as a result. Johnson urged by veterans of Northern Ireland politics to address unrest there before situation falls over. Northern Ireland faces serious turmoil unless the British government takes a more direct role in resolving grievances stemming from Brexit, a group of former political, security and religious leaders has warned. Government denies report that Bojo said he would rather let bodies pile high than impose third lockdown, but Brits are still fuming. A report claiming that Boris Johnson exclaimed that he would rather allow a surge in deaths than place the UK in another lockdown has enraged pundits. The government has strongly denied the claims. MI6 is green spying on China and other nations to ensure they keep their climate change promises, agency chief reveals. So British agents are monitoring the world's largest polluters, particularly China, to ensure that they are honouring their international commitments regarding the environment, Richard Moore, the head of MI6, has disclosed. Comparing vaccine certificates to the Holocaust. Anti-lockdown Brits spotted wearing yellow Star of David badges. So photographs of several people wearing Star of David badges during a massive anti-lockdown demonstration in London have riled social media users, many of whom thought the gimmick was in extremely poor taste. Thousands of anti-lockdown protesters take over central London. That happened on Saturday, so thousands of protesters have descended on London to protest the British government's ongoing coronavirus restrictions. Though pubs and shops have reopened, stiff limits on gatherings remain in place. Appalling injustice overturned as UK court clears names of post office workers wrongfully convicted due to faulty software. Dozens of former post office workers have had their convictions for theft and fraud thrown out after an accounting system used in their branches was later deemed faulty, bringing partial closure to a decades-old legal scandal. PM's former top aide, Cummings, denies leaking Dyson texts, claims Johnson had possibly illegal plans to fund Downing Street refurb. Sir Dominic Cummings, former chief advisor to Boris Johnson, has denied being the source of leaked text messages in which the Prime Minister seemingly promised British billionaire James Dyson he could fix his staff tax concerns. Unjustified. Sir Downing Street blasts French fishermen's blockade as disagreements over access to UK waters roll on. The UK Prime Minister's spokesman has issued a stern rebuke aimed at the French fishing industry after groups of trawlermen in France blockaded lorries carrying UK landed fish, protesting a lack of access to British waters. And where US military helicopter destroys a landing pad during drill at UK hospital, forcing facility to divert emergency airlifts. So a hospital helipad in the English city of Cambridge was knocked out of commission by a US Air Force helicopter during an exercise, blowing the pad to pieces and compelling a diversion of emergency flights elsewhere. Now, I don't think I'm going to get the chance to read anything in depth there, folks, but I will post the link to the UK news in the chat room because I'm aware we're coming up to the top of the hour. So there you go. I'll just post that link there in the chat room for you. There it is for you. But, yeah, as I say, we're coming up to the top of the hour, folks, so I recommend you go and get yourselves a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, because after the break, will be focusing on a very important issue indeed, which is the impact of the pandemic upon the live music scene. Specifically, its struggle, the struggles by independent music venues in both the United States and the United Kingdom, and probably all over the world as well. But these items or these articles specifically focus on the United States and the United Kingdom to survive both during and after the lockdowns of the past 14 months. So we are coming up to, well, it's 13 months for definite. We're coming up to 14 months. So rather important topic indeed. So I suggest you go and get yourself a cup of tea, a cup of coffee. But don't worry about it if you can't, because I'll be serving them up in the poetry corner anyway, because that's where we're going to be seated. So music should be starting any time now. Oh, yeah, and I've got the dishes of dainty delectables as well, folks. So see you after the break.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening. give, I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Monday, the 26th of April, 2021 edition of Willow's World. My name is Willow Andreasen, also known as Sorry Sunflower, in the Freedom's Lips Revolution Radio chat room. And it's just turned 8 o'clock in the evening over here in the UK, which means it's just turned through 3 o'clock in the afternoon over on the East Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time, 1 o'clock in the afternoon Mountain Time, and it's just turned midday over on the West Coast. Looking at the time, it's probably between 4 and 6 o'clock in the morning in Australia, and probably about 8, 9 o'clock in New Zealand. But wherever you are in the world, I hope that life is being reasonably kind to you, regardless of the continuing lockdown sagas, she says, with tongue glued firmly to cheek, and that you haven't... It's been a very, very punishing time for so many. And I know I say it every single show, but I absolutely mean this from the very core of my being, that it is essential to remember that there is still so much beauty to behold in the world. There is still much humour to be enjoyed. And it is essential to ensure that that spark of joy remains ignited. And if you feel it's close to being extinguished, or it has been extinguished, take gentle steps to reignite it. As I say on every show, the best way to do that is to be creative. Whether it's brandishing a paintbrush, channeling your inner Bob Ross, getting out that old guitar that you used to play at school and channeling your inner Eric Clapton, or whoever your favourite guitarist is. Getting out into that kitchen, doing some baking. I'm not sure who the equivalent of. I'm going to stick with an English one I know, the late, great Keith Floyd. Channeling your inner Keith Floyd. Favourite of my sister's he was. Favourite of mine as well. Very, very good. And getting out in that garden and channeling your inner Charlie Dimmock. Also an English gardener. She's fabulous. Just getting out and enjoying nature. There is so much beauty to be beheld in both hemispheres at the moment. Different seasons. But there's so many beautiful colours to savour during spring and autumn. don't forget to have joy, to have enjoy yourself, folks, and to have, I say, read a book even, watch your favorite comedy. Do what it takes. Do what it takes to reignite that sparkle, to gently, gently keep it going. You know, if you keep nurturing it enough, it will become a flame. A powerful, powerful flame that will eventually become a burning inner fire that will be felt by so many around you. If you feel alone at all, come and join us in the chat room, folks. It'd be good to see you. It'd be good to see you in there. Big hello to everybody who's come into the chat room, by the way, during the past half hour or so. The mechanics in there as well. I can see the mechanics in. Of course, mechanic hosts. He hosts the High Council Roundtable on the studio Thursdays, midnight Eastern. And he's also going to be on Thursday as well at 4 p.m. Eastern with Common Denominator. So come in and join us, folks. It'd be good to see you. The more the merrier. And this show of mine, this weird old show of mine, and the others as well, is a broadcast on the world's largest listener-supported station, folks. We are Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And huge outpouring of gratitude to our supporters and listeners. Because of the support we receive from you, we are able to ensure that this fantastic network of ours remains commercial free. And if you'd like to support us and you're not sure how, folks, I recommend you visit our website. You can reach the website using one of two URLs. It's either www.revolution.radio or www.freedomslips.com, and explore this fantastic website of ours, which has been radically overhauled and redecorated by the fabulous Monster 383. And I'm going to check the count again, you know. Where you need to check, though, if you want to find out how to support us. Store, click on that. That takes you to our Zazzle store, folks. There's a 15% off deal today across Zazzle. That's 15%. So good day to go in there and bag a bargain, so to speak. You'll be helping out the station as well. Donations, if you click on that, it shows you. But there's two, obviously, what I've just mentioned, and also there's another way which I'll mention later. It details all bar two of the different ways you can help the station. Patreon, of course, we have you can support us on a monthly basis using Patreon. You have to be a patron to do that. Donor box, that's international in scope. Again, you can use it whenever you wish. And yeah, it's the alternative to PayPal, folks, as well. So yeah, you can use that when you wish, or you can establish a regular monthly payment. And also, if you happen to be in the US or Canada and have a credit or debit card, direct payment North America only would be suitable for you as well. Again, you've got the two options available there too. You can establish a regular payment, or you can use it when you wish. We accept three different cryptocurrencies, folks, and they are Bitcoin, Ethereum and Bitcoin Cash. QR codes are on the page. Point your device at them. Do your thing. We still accept checks and money orders, folks, and they are to be made payable to Revolution Radio. And then they are to be mailed to the wonderful lady horse, Terry Ackerman, at 1793 North Eden Road. That's Allen, Michigan, 49227. Those details, sorry if you just heard that because I just accidentally clipped the headset. those details and also the Patreon details are all available on the main homepage where I'm returning now. The count currently reads 66,589. Because you can advertise on the station's website, folks. It's $25 a month. And if you like some more details, you need to contact the station's general manager on his email address, which is themadpainter13@yahoo.com. I'll spell out that first bit for you. themadpainter13@yahoo.com. And don't forget the archives, folks. Free to access will be for the foreseeable. You can reach it by either clicking archives, which is third along on the nav bar, going direct to its URL, which is www.revolutionradioarchives.com, and using these essential details, which are both lowercase and case sensitive. That's the username and the password. Username is Rev Radio, R-E-V-R-A-D-I-O. And the password is Rocks exclamation mark. That's R-O-C-K-S exclamation mark, folks. But don't forget that exclamation mark, folks, because without it, you won't get in. I'll tell you that right now. But again, a huge, huge thank you to all for being so wonderfully supportive of us, especially through challenging times. We never, ever take that for granted, folks. We never do. Big, 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 big thank you to you all. Thank you. So I've opened the doors now to the coziness is Willow's Poetry Corner, but we're taking a break from the Poetry Corner's usual poetic peregrinations for a topic which requires immense focus. And that is the impact of the pandemic, specifically the lockdowns, upon the live music scene. Specifically the struggles being faced by independent music venues right now, both the United States and the United Kingdom. As I mentioned in the first hour, same world over, but these particular articles are focusing on the United States and the United Kingdom. And they are struggling, folks. They are struggling to survive. And some are doing so by the skin of their teeth. And I have a selection of articles which raise awareness of these struggles, which I'm now about to share with you. And the first article is from Harvard Crimson. It was authored by Sam D. Cohen. It was posted up only 6 days ago. And it's headlined, Inside the Fight to Hashtag Save Our Stages, Independent Venues Struggle to Survive the Pandemic Year. As I was saying in the first hour, I mean, independent music venues, the smaller venues, I find as I'm maturing, I prefer those. I say maturing, I'm in my 50s, by the way. But here's the article. Before the pandemic, Once in Somerville was known for its wild rock shows. One of its final concerts even saw the lead singer of a band then called Power Slut jump off the stage and crowd surf into a rainbow unicorn inflatable kiddie pool, says J.J. Gonson, the venue's owner. Gonson loved to host events like this at her venue every week. However, as a result of the pandemic, Once was forced to permanently close its doors. Having lost the lease for her space, Gonson doesn't know when she'll be able to get back to hosting bands like Power Slut again, if ever. As vaccination rates continue to rise, the prospect of live concerts returning within the year, or even this summer, is trending more realistic than optimistic each day. Exciting as this may be, it will have to happen without Once and the hundreds of other independent venues across the country who are unable to make it to the finish line, and many more may still join them. Over the past year, independent venues have faced unique challenges in surviving the pandemic, and until recently, the federal government has done little to support them. The venues that have survived are hanging by a thread, held on the other end by the support of their communities and the tenacity of their owners. One light at the end of a long tunnel, however, has been the hashtag Save Our Stages movement, which successfully advocated for a law which allocates $16.25 billion of government funds from the most recent stimulus bill for direct support to independent venues. Remember your last live concert? No, not when you saw Maroon 5 for a National Arena tour. I mean, the last packed crowd, jumping up and down, sticky floor, eardrum blowing concert. These are the specialty of the independent venue. Live event spaces not owned by corporations. The places that cater to local artists rather than national tours. Every world famous band has to start somewhere, right? Emily K. Ruddock is the executive director at Mass Creative, a statewide arts and cultural advocacy organisation. From her years of experience working to ensure the health of Massachusetts' cultural sector, Ruddock recognises the unique importance of independent music venues. Independent live music venues are the places where careers are born. They are places that are deeply embedded in their communities. They know the artists. They are champions of the artists. You don't have musicians that have long careers without these folks. And it's small. It's super scrappy. But it matters. It matters, she said. One such venue is Wally's Cafe Jazz Club in Boston, managed by Frank F. Poindexter. Wally's has been family-owned and operated since 1947, when it was founded by Poindexter's grandfather, Joseph L. Walcott, after he immigrated from Barbados. Wally's was Boston's first integrated jazz club, and since its inception has helped countless aspiring jazz musicians get their start. What he, Walcott, decided to do was go to the colleges that have music students studying jazz and match them with seasoned professionals who were already in here, Poindexter said. From the 60s until now, Wally's has basically been known as a training ground for jazz music because of its incredible ecosystem of music education in Boston. You've got Berklee College of Music. You've got New England Conservatory, Boston Conservatory. Harvard has a great music program. Boston University has a great program, and a lot of number of the other institutions in the area. With that ecosystem, Wally's is a venue where these musicians can practice to perfect their craft. The college students who perfected their craft at Wally's over the years have gone on to play in big bands, win Grammys, and play late-night shows like The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Wally's even gave rise to producers like Jeff Basker, who's produced Kanye West and Lady Gaga, and Neil Jacobson, who's produced Billie Eilish. It's just a part of all the talent that comes to Wally's. We do live music 7 days a week, three bands a day. A large number of musicians who have been educated in this area have used the stage to create their career networks, Poindexter said. The Comedy Studio, a comedy club owned by Rick J. Jenkins, tries to provide a similar space for aspiring comedians to hone their craft. Comedy Studio hosted shows up to 6 days a week in the space above Hong Kong in Cambridge for nearly 25 years, featuring the likes of then Harvard students Colin Jost in 04, BJ Novak in 01, Dan Mintz in 02. After opening a larger dedicated space in Union Square 2 years ago, the Comedy Studio has tried to branch out into hosting comedy classes and workshops alongside an open mic that aimed at giving up and coming comedians an opportunity to test new material and develop an audience, according to Jenkins. We're really trying to be more of a centre for a comedy community. Independent venues are really the first stepping stone. Without the independent venue, there is no feeder system for entertainment as an industry, Jenkins said. Those who operate independent venues are deeply interested in their local communities, hosting events that feature local talent and cater to local tastes. Before the pandemic, Gonson enjoyed hosting a wide variety of community events at once. From performances by local bands to a full production of Hair, the Boston Rock Opera, wrestling matches, and the Rock and Roll Rumble, a nine-night competition of local music. Sam J. Epstein, the owner of another Somerville venue, The Jungle, looks forward to restarting its Wednesday night open mic tradition. So it's kind of just a night for the musicians. We would see the same musicians coming back every Wednesday night. And that was the coolest thing for me because they weren't booked to play. They were just a community of local musicians who heard about us, came by, and liked it. The music is always so reliable and such a great experience. And so that's cool for me to see musicians performing one after another just all night long, Epstein said. Until the pandemic, the Regent Theatre in Arlington was in continuous operation for over a century. Its current owner, Leland D. Stein, emphasised its goal of bringing people together through music, theatre and film. When we were suddenly shut down last March, the financial devastation was real. But really what affected me personally more was the sudden loss of community, he said. Beyond conventional entertainment, the Regent has also been known to host baptisms, engagements, weddings, and even a sold-out Harvard symposium on the revised interest in the use of psychedelic mushrooms and on microdoses in psychotherapy, including a feature film and panel discussion. Anything the community is interested in, the Regent is eager to support, Stein said. On the other hand, Venues owned by corporations with shareholders and management bureaucracy have much less flexibility on the types of events they can host, tending to gravitate towards booking artists that are much more established. They're unlikely to know about niche community interest or local artists who are up and coming, much less take a chance on them and book them to perform. The people who book our clubs know the local tastes. They can predict if this artist would be a good fit here to help develop. You have to know your audience. You can't know your audience by phoning it in or looking at a spreadsheet, said Audrey Fix-Schaefer, Director of Communications at the National Independent Venue Association, a non-profit coalition of independent venue owners that was formed at the start of the pandemic. Although venues like House of Blues in Boston, owned by Live Nation, which is headquartered in California, or the Sinclair in Cambridge, owned by the Bowery Presents, headquartered in New York, might come to mind when one thinks of a local concert venue in the greater Boston area. They play a markedly different role in the music industry ecosystem than do independent venues like Once, albeit an equally important one. Corporate venues serve a very specific purpose, which is to bring touring acts to a certain level. There's a lot of handshaking going on. I'll book your band this time, but the next time this guy comes through, they come to me. It's a whole thing. And it's done with those people at a national level, as opposed to locally, Gonson said. An independent venue is sort of feeling through the market a little more on the ground, or maybe is actually headquartered in the place that it's operated in. Unable to curate live events amidst the pandemic, many venue owners have turned to streaming shows to keep their communities together. Even without a physical space, Once has produced virtual programming on its YouTube channel, which has streamed over 100 shows with local artists. The whole motivation when we started this was really about not losing track of our community and making sure that artists were able to make art and that we could support local music and all those things that we care about, because they are what keep us alive spiritually. And it actually really has helped a lot, I think, personally. It helps a lot socially for us to feel like we can see each other and be together, Gonson said. Gonson has also worked to keep her community alive by helping to start Save MA Stages, the Massachusetts chapter of NEVA. The organisation has disseminated information from NEVA, making sure as many venues as possible are able to take advantage of opportunities for support, and served as a meeting place for venue owners to collaborate and amplify their collective voice. Although independent venues play such an important role in local communities and the entertainment industry at large by giving local artists their start, they have struggled to stay afloat through the challenges of the pandemic. Live entertainment venues were among the first businesses to shut down at the onset of the pandemic and will be the last to reopen. And, unlike restaurants or retail businesses, it's virtually impossible for independent venues to make any income in the meantime. You certainly can't call up a venue and order a live concert for curbside pickup. If there was no emergency relief from the federal government, 90% of NEVA venues expected that they would go under. Hundreds did, and hundreds did because the relief didn't come fast enough, said Fix-Schaefer. Since March 2020, the arts and culture sector has reported over $15 billion in lost revenue nationally, according to the Americans for the Arts. These staggering statistics are due in part to the nature of the live entertainment industry, which operates on incredibly thin margins and is highly competitive. Overwhelmingly, those who work in live entertainment take their profits in the shared appreciation of music, art, and cultural community, not cash. Breaking even is considered a success. Even within the live entertainment industry, independent venues also face unique challenges compared to their corporate-owned counterparts. As Fix-Schaefer explained, independent venues don't have the financial backstops of publicly traded companies that have shareholders. Multinationals certainly have access to Wall Street credit lines that independent venues don't. In the greater Boston area, venues have felt these challenges firsthand. According to Ruddock, alarm bells were already being rung about the lack of creative space, with venues like the Middle East in Central Square going on sale. We're seeing other venues that have been stalwarts of the independent music scene disappearing. I think the real tragedy of this moment is we saw an acceleration of that, Ruddock said. Venues in Massachusetts reported $483 million in pandemic-related losses between March and November, according to the Mass Cultural Council. While these losses are significant in and of themselves, they multiply further considering the impact venues have on nearby restaurants, hotels and stores, among other businesses. The 2019 Economic Impact Study in Chicago showed that every dollar spent at a small music venue generated $12 of economic activity for area businesses. That's an oh wow kind of statistic, which tells elected officials that by giving support to a venue that's been shuttered, you are not just allowing it to hold on until it's safe to reopen, you are protecting the economic engine that will drive renewal for your communities, said Fix Schaefer. The economic effect is not just about incentivizing locals to spend more money. It also comes from people traveling from out of town, out of state even, to attend an event. Restaurants and retail can't drive tourism by themselves in the same way. The erosion of small businesses as a result of the pandemic was not ignored by the federal government, but little attention was paid into how independent venues fit into the picture of general economic relief. The $2 trillion CARES Act introduced the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP, which provides forgivable loans from the government that businesses can use to stay afloat as their revenue takes a significant hit as a result of the pandemic. However, what poses an existential challenge for the live events industry is that independent venues are essentially ineligible to use these loans in their intended way. 60% of PPP loans must be used for payroll, and businesses have to either keep on their employees or rehire them at the end of their 24-week loan period in order to have the loan forgiven. For independent venues who have had no idea when they will be able to reopen, whose businesses have been illegal to operate in the interim, taking a PPP loan would likely do more harm than good. Such was the case for Wally's, Poindexter said. At the time that opportunity was offered to us, the rules were still in fluctuation. So, for a small business owner, we would have had to take on possibly even more debt. And we would not have known what our obligation would be when their term of that loan became due, he said. In addition to direct federal aid, state governments also bear the responsibility of providing the necessary support to its businesses. However, State Senator Ed Kennedy, a Democrat who co-chairs the Tourism, Arts and Cultural Development Joint Committee of the Massachusetts State Legislature, explained that independent venues have had to compete with a wide array of interested parties for state funding. We've got the vaccine issue going on. Unemployment benefits are a big issue. And so there are other needs for public funds besides entertainment venues. So it would just be a matter of convincing everybody that these venues are important and that they should get some public funding, he said. Mercedes S. Roman Manson, communications and marketing manager at the Massachusetts Live Events Coalition, also emphasized that beyond the businesses themselves, venues employ a large and diverse network of workers. There are technical staff, busses, food and beverage staff, people that park cars, people that work the front of the house, merch people, wedding planners, event planners, rental companies, lighting companies, sound companies. It's just a huge amount of people, she said. Compounding the danger to independent venues is the fact that many of their employees are contract workers who work on a 1099 tax basis rather than a W-2, making it even more difficult to get pandemic unemployment assistance. In light of these unprecedented challenges, venue owners have had to become fierce advocates for their own businesses' welfare. This began last March when a coalition of venue owners came together to form NEVA, which has worked tirelessly to advocate for public support tailored to the needs of its now more than 3,000 independent venue members work nationwide. NEVA quickly launched the hashtag Save Our Stages initiative, which sought to pressure Congress to enact tailored pandemic relief specific to independent entertainment venues. According to Fix Schaefer, NEVA worked with lobbying firm Akin Gump to inform its political strategy and, through grassroots organizing and social media campaigns, was able to encourage over 2.1 million people to send emails for its cause. Yet, despite this early momentum, NEVA was unable to get legislation to the floor before Congress's July 4th recess last year. We were just absolutely devastated. But we knew, okay, they'll come back, we'll come back, And we're going to keep fighting for this because we have no other choice, Vic Schaefer said. As for the fight for the relief legislation, which came to be known as the Save Our Stages Act, was ongoing, NEVA also organised Save Our Stages Fest, a three-day virtual music festival that took place in October. This benefit event kickstarted a donation campaign for the NEVA Emergency Relief Fund, which has since raised over $3 million and offered grants to 153 venues. Save Our Stages Fest was streamed simultaneously from more than 25 different independent venues across the country, each hosting artists like Miley Cyrus, Dave Matthews Band, and Demi Lovato, among others, many of whom had history at the venues at which they performed. Ted M. Kartzman, who works as an independent music partnerships manager at YouTube, owned by Google, helped organise Save Our Stages Fest by sourcing equipment for all of the participating venues. The event was streamed using cameras donated by Google and supplied by Big Room TV, a company which has engineered artificial intelligence software that is able to autonomously operate several recording cameras, alternating different shooting angles and producing the final stream without any human intervention. This technology helped to make the event safer for the performers by requiring less crew on hand. As an added benefit, venues who received this equipment were able to keep it permanently, enabling them to pursue their own streaming shows in a safe and cost-effective manner and bring in revenue for the remainder of the pandemic. Kartzman also facilitated equipment donations to Wally's, even though it was undergoing renovations at the time of Save Our Stages Fest, because he had an experience there he'll never forget. In the mid-90s, I was there, and I saw this incredible jazz meets funk night and just will never forget the venue. And that, to me, is the independent venue. They've been around for generations, and so many people have had these experiences. That's a treasure that we can't lose, he said. The Big Room TV equipment has enabled Wally's to pursue streaming shows to make extra revenue while it remains closed. They've given us tremendous information on assisting us pivoting to a streaming service and how to leverage the YouTube platform in order to present content to a wider audience, which could lead to merchandising opportunities, Poindexter said. Despite this generous donation from Google organised by Kartzman, Wally's has survived primarily only through the tenacity of Poindexter's family, who applied for small grants and debt funding to cover operational costs, and support from the local community, which recognised Wally's irreplaceable cultural value by donating through GoFundMe. Kennedy, the state senator, has also been working to help Massachusetts' treasured independent venues by considering subsidies for reduced capacity operations for the summer. I've been in touch with other senators in the Massachusetts Senate about seeing what venues are doing and what kind of money is going to be needed in order for them to be successful, or at least to stay in the black this year should they choose to operate, he said. Subsidising reduced capacity events would enable venues to begin to rebuild their cultural community without having to toe the precarious line between safety and profitability. As Kennedy seeks support for this funding, venues can also apply for grants from the Massachusetts Cultural Council and Massachusetts Growth Capital Corporation. Although the Massachusetts State Legislature and Cultural Council has worked to make funding available for its arts and culture sectors, not all local governments have been as sympathetic. For Alexis Richardson, a musician and Somerville resident, not knowing when she will be able to perform again has taken a significant toll on her livelihood. We kind of feel like we're not really being looked after, and we're not really being taken seriously, she said. According to the Mass Cultural Council, individual creative workers in Massachusetts have reported more than $20 million in lost income between March and November 2020. Artists like Richardson facing this challenge thought they could rely on the local government to consider their needs, but for months, she said, the city of Somerville worked against her. As Massachusetts entered phase three, step one of reopening at the end of July, activities such as indoor swimming pools, indoor hockey and sporting events became permissible with certain restrictions, as well as live music events at social distance capacity, including at restaurants. However, despite entering this step and permitting all of the former sporting events to take place, the city of Somerville placed a specific ordinance outlawing outdoor music performance of any kind at restaurants and venues, even though they were deemed to be equal risk by the state. Richardson frequently plays at Epstein's venue, the Jungle. However, despite Epstein's efforts to create a safe, socially distanced area for musicians to perform on his venue-turned-restaurant's outdoor patio, Richardson was not able to perform there. Somerville is the only city in the state that put an extra rule in place and said there can be no radio, no live music, no music performance at all whatsoever. And it was really just to look tough on Corona, Epstein said. Epstein and Richardson teamed up with Somerville City Councillor Wilfred Mbar, who helped them draft and present an order in December which pledged to musicians and venues that the city would have greater transparency and consistency on its COVID-19 regulations. It was passed unanimously. Every city councillor voted yes, that this was an overstep, and it was basically just scapegoating musicians without protecting public health, Epstein said. Fortunately for venues that have managed to survive the pandemic year without effective public support, help is finally on its way. Despite failing to pass the Save Our Stages Act by its initial goal last summer, NEVA did not stop pushing. The Save Our Stages Act, which was initially sponsored by Senators Amy Klobuchar, a Democrat Minnesota, and John Cornyn from Republican Texas, eventually amassed 220 co-sponsors. The bill had bipartisan support in both chambers of Congress, which Shaver remarks is wildly unusual. Over 1,000 artists signed letters to members of Congress to support the bill as well. After months of growing public sentiment and political momentum, the Save Our Stages Act passed on December 21st, 2020. The original law appropriated $15 billion from the most recent COVID-19 relief bill to be specifically earmarked for independent entertainment venues. But the amount was extended by $1.25 billion through an amendment spearheaded by Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat New York. In addition to extra funding, the amendment addressed some shortcomings of the original legislation. First, the amendment earmarked $840,000 for the Small Business Administration, which is tasked with distributing the funds to help make the application process as accessible as possible. Second, it eliminated an earlier provision barring venues from accepting a second-round PPP loan, the funding for which was made available much earlier than the new funding would arrive. Instead of having to choose between a sooner payout and a chance at a larger one, which Ruddock indicated was a real concern for venues in Massachusetts, venues can now take a PPP2 loan and then apply for the new program and have the prior PPP2 money deducted from their new award. Now totaling $16.25 billion, the funds available through the Save Our Stages Act will be distributed in the form of shuttered venue operator grants, which will offer a single sum up to 45% of venues' 2019 revenue, capped at $10 million. The grants will go out first to venues who have lost over 90% of their revenue in the pandemic, with eligibility increasing every 2 weeks to venues that took less of a financial hit. In order to be eligible, venues must meet a long list of specific criteria, including being privately owned, having less than 500 employees, and operating in less than 10 states, among other restrictions. $2 billion of the total appropriations are also set aside specifically for venues with less than 50 employees. The SBA began accepting applications for these grants on April 8th. For the venue operators who have held on this long, the promise of recouping nearly half of lost revenues gives them a lot of hope. Stein noted that the grant will allow him to take a breath and hold over his business until it can resume normal operations, which he tentatively targets for the fall. Jenkins highlighted his gratitude that his business was included in the SVOG program as a comedy club. A little lifeline could go a long way, he said. Epstein expressed gratitude to have received such overwhelming support from community donations to government grants. We really need it all, he said. In addition to the federal SVOG program, forthcoming aid on the state level might be able to provide even more support to independent venues and other cultural institutions like museums, which were not prioritised in the Save Our Stages Act. Kennedy sponsored a bill, SD2105, in the Massachusetts state legislature called An Act to Rebuild the Commonwealth's Cultural Future, which would create a $200 million fund for many kinds of cultural businesses and organisations. Whether it will pass in the state legislature remains to be seen. While many venues are enthusiastic about these upcoming opportunities for aid, for those that have already lost their spaces or closed their businesses entirely, this relief might be coming too late. I do know that the ones that are open are very excited about this and it'll make a huge difference. But I don't know what's going to happen with us once because we closed, Gonson said. We're trying to find a new space, but we don't have one yet. And it says here, though independent venues have demonstrated incredible resilience, public support still remains vital. To join the fight to keep these businesses alive, you can. There's a support form on this article that you can fill out on the Crimson. For the Act to Rebuild the Commonwealth's Cultural Future, you can donate to the NEVA Emergency Relief Fund, which continues to provide grants to venues in need, or simply purchase merchandise or attend a streaming show of a venue in your local area. The past year has taught us anything. Hopefully it's not to underestimate how much independent venues need us, and more importantly, how much we need them. I'll just share that one there in the chat room. And the next article I'm going to look at is going to be a UK article, which is, I'm trying to decide which one I'm going to look at, whether it's going to be the Guardian one, which is from 3 months ago. Well, yeah, I'll look at the Guardian one first, and hopefully I'll be able to look at the other article from here in the UK. This article from the Guardian was posted up 27th of December, so it's about coming up to 4 months old. Written by Michelle Cambasha. It's COVID has decimated the live music business and its unsung heroes. So as a music publicist, who Michelle Cambasha is, she fears for the workers who kept the UK's industry on the road and now face economic hardship. For the vast majority of people, gigs are, or perhaps were, a simple pastime to be enjoyed, places where memories are made. But for me and others in my profession, it can feel a lot like work. Being a music publicist, gig going is a requirement and usually a welcome one, though it can create a disorderly work-life balance. I'd be lying if I said that at times. I haven't had a deep sense of sadness when I found out that the stage time for a gig I should be at is at 10 p.m. and is on the other side of London from where I live. It may seem silly to people with normal jobs, but we miss the simple pleasures. Sometimes I'd rather be curled up on a sofa cathartically crying to an episode of Grey's Anatomy and making a fresh meal, rather than backstage at my fifth gig of the week, eating warm hummus and soggy cucumbers from the band's rider, as random people look me up and down, wondering why I'm here. As COVID-19 forced all of us into our homes earlier this year, it savaged the music industry. It was sobering to be at home, watching helplessly as my industry was turned on its head. But it wasn't lost on me that the area where most of my sympathy and worry was directed was also the part of the industry I often have the most complaints about. Live music. Since March, this is obviously last year, coronavirus has decimated the live industry. A lot was made of the importance of saving music venues and supporting musicians, and rightly so. Many venues, especially in London, were already under enormous economic pressure due to rising rents. Now they were shuttered completely, and touring is a primary source of income for the majority of musicians. But not enough has been said about the workers who make live music tick, the people whom fans and gig-goers barely know about. Managers and tour managers, festival staff, sound technicians, promoters and booking agents and their long-suffering assistants. As a publicist, I work very closely with them for all manner of reasons. I couldn't schedule a day of show interview without a manager waking the artist up from their slumber to make sure they were on time for it. I couldn't cheekily negotiate extra tickets on the door because a journalist has a cousin in town and can't possibly go to the show without them, unless I had the helping hand of the promoter. I have a story about a 2014 Glastonbury ticket stranded in the Netherlands that had to make it to the back of the pyramid stage within 24 hours. I'll spare the details, but a tour manager made it happen against all odds. The way in which the livelihoods of people working in live music has been upended by the pandemic puts into stark relief the inequalities and gaps in the music industry. We talk about the industry en masse, but we rarely consider the split between industry executives like me, who sit behind desks, and our counterparts on the ground. Some executives have a strong structure to fall back on when the wider music machine stutters. Our jobs weren't immediately upended by the pandemic. While I was worried about work a lot this year, I felt confident that I'd still have a paycheck for a few months at least. But many people working in live music didn't have that privilege. Thankfully, there have been some support networks for music industry workers hit hard by COVID-19 lockdowns. The Association for Independent Music launched a support fund for music professionals who were freelancers and contractors, including most people in the live sector. The Arts Council and the Music Managers Forum also provided help. Major label artists like Niall Horan and indie powerhouses such as Angel Olsen set up paid for live stream concerts with proceeds going to their touring band and crew members. Paul Redding, chief executive of one of the largest independent record companies, Beggars Group, swam the channel with some of those proceeds going to music industry workers in need of financial relief. These efforts showed at least an understanding that people working for touring musicians are integral to the industry, something the government was rather more blasé about. What is a more long-term solution to protect these people's income? It's hard to find a complete answer. The economic upheaval caused by COVID-19 has given reason for everyone working in music to examine their privileges, exercise compassion, and deeply consider the most precarious parts of our sector. I've had a lot of the best nights of my life at gigs in tiny bars and seen artists I work with grow from venue to venue as their audience expands. It's strange now to no longer be regularly bumping into promoters, tour managers, and festival organisers along the way, and a lot have become friends. Occasionally during lockdown, I've even missed going to 5 shows a week. When live music does return, I expect I'll still be stuck backstage refreshing work emails, but I'll certainly be more vocal about my appreciation for my colleagues on the ground, not just when I need to squeeze a personal 3 onto a guest list. There we go, I'll just share that one there in the chat room. And I hope to, I'll try to get through this one. I don't know if I can. So I may save this one to a later, because this is actually from the Norwich Radical, this article. It's concerning the underground music scene after COVID. What I'll do is I'll make a start on it. It's written by Ash. It was posted up 26th of March this year. Your local music scene is a hive of energy which fuses together networks of people from all walks of life. It's as much an awkward social battleground as it is an arena where ideas can be shared and explored in confidence and solidarity. It sustains avenues of expression which promote unity and mutual aid and offers sanctuary for people from disadvantaged and marginalised backgrounds to let off steam. So as we enter a political chapter dominated by censorship and surveillance, we should all be asking ourselves what we can do to keep it alive. Pre-pandemic, venue doors were closing far and wide. Musicians were struggling to afford brekkie, let alone petrol. And I heard through the grapevine that some metal drummers were struggling to find bands for once. So what's likely to change in our local music scene as we near the easing of government restrictions after a year of varying lockdown degrees? Well, even the crusties have turned to hand sanitizer. This time they're not knocking it back. We can only speculate and shiver in anticipation for the challenges ahead. In the UK particularly, the COVID-19 pandemic has sparked mass uncertainty and precariousness. So for many, little has changed. The biggest implication these pressing times will have on local music will be by far the economic hardship and social exclusion which individuals, communities and businesses have all experienced, not only due to the direct consequences of the virus itself, but also our government's abysmal self-serving approach to tackling, in the best of cases, and exploiting it. If it wasn't already hard enough to get 4 people with instruments in a room twice a month, or 20 gig-goers in a pub for 2 hours on a Friday night, now there's even less room, more regulations, and everyone is trying to work around financial and social instability in one way or another, meaning those who already were in the before time really are today. So, what's likely to change in our local music scene as we near the easing? just asked. There are some obvious hurdles to expect regarding the freedom of movement for touring bands and additional costs being pushed on to manufacturers and distributors of merchandise as the new border and commerce protocols are rolled out for Brexit. These consequences and costs will split a nice hole in the music lover's pocket and dramatically stunt bands' abilities to get about. The main concern for musos surrounds the hospitality industry, where poor communication, biased government funding and shoddy guidelines have compounded the existing financial stress on our pubs, clubs and music venues, in turn leading them closer to closure and thinning already sparse options for live music. Keeping these venues open is essential. So whether you're a die-hard crowd surfer, back row tapper or just like skanking to the shouty stuff, there's no point venues hosting gigs if nobody comes. The biggest chunk of the task force, with more influence than you know. We all go to gigs, and we all love them. So here's a few things to think about or take on board coming out of lockdown, hopefully, in the next few months. Come, just turn up to gigs, bring a fiver if you can. Buy some music, hit Bandcamp up. If you like, stick a quid on it and say thanks. Check out and support the Music Venue Trust, donate if you can. Signs are a great way for anyone to show their appreciation for the scene and express what they love about it, so why not get fiddly with a glue stick and some torn up posters? Similarly, if you're creative and can't think of anything to draw or paint, get inspired by local musicians and funnel their ideas or lyrics into your artwork to get the word about. Offer your time. If you're skilled or qualified in a particular field, post a shout out and offer some help. Graphic designers, door staff and sound engineers especially. Start a band. If you can play an instrument or have a melody stuck in your head, work with it and see what happens. More music means more music. And there's other suggestions here as well, which I don't know if I can get to, but it says if you're planning to organise gigs, here's a few points I've mulled over recently, which may help us to generate more inclusive and proactive events. So mixed genres, sticking the same bands on together timing and again gets boring and breeds cliquiness. Gig filled with a variety of styles and influence invites a variety of people with different interests and finding common ground amongst that. Okay, and there's also outdoor space as well to consider. Collaborate with others. There's multifaceted events as well, which you should consider. And don't exclude children. But what I'll do is I'll share this article, which is on the Norwich, as I said, it's a Norwich Radical, in the chat room. And because I'm aware we're coming up to the top of the hour now. And I'm going to be handing over the the headset to Ro shortly. It's going to be on with Crypto Corner. We've got a lot on both studios tonight, folks. So on after Ro will be Deacon at 5 p.m. with Liberation Nation. 6 p.m. sees Jimmy Jean with Into the Microcosm. 8 p.m. sees Lorien Fenton with The Fenton Perspective. And AMAB Painter rounds off the evening here on A with Open Cams at 10 p.m. Eastern. Over on B shortly will be Christine Corder with the Christine Corder Show. Following Christine at 6 p.m. will be Mario with This, That, and the Other. Scott McKay is on at 8 p.m. Eastern with The Tipping Point, and Robert Morningstar rounds off the evening on B at 10 p.m. with The Right Stuff. And I'll be back with you on Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, with more Willow's World. You all take care. See you then.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a civil majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look!
look! Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that! What? Come here! What are you gonna do, bleed on me? I'm invincible! You're a loony. The Black Knight always triumphs!
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Hi, everybody. It's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at